So that was the one and only Patti Smith with Gloria. And good evening, everyone. This is 90.5 CFCR, your only feminist show, The Laundry List.
Woo!
And I am your host, Manuela.
And I'm your host, Lisa.
Yeah. And if you have never heard me before and you're wondering, who is this Manuela with? Who is this lady with an accent? I'll just tell you that I just recently got on board the wonderful ship of the Laundry List.
Ahoy, matey.
Ahoy! And I'm very excited about it. I met some of these ladies through Girls Rock Camp, and it so happens that I teach women's and gender studies at the University of Saskatchewan. I am originally and ultimately Chilean. And today, I'm here with Lisa to talk about feminist parenting and what could that be?
What could that be? You're
Yeah.
gonna school me. You're gonna tell me because I'm not really sure.
I'm really just gonna ramble about a series of questions and topics that I always think about. I gotta disclose to you that I am the parent of two really wonderful young ladies as well. So shout out to Guadalupe and Ramona who are at home listening. And yeah, as a feminist and as a parent, I thought that I was lacking conversations about what it means to be a parent when you're a feminist, and how many times these things are just assumed to be kind of like guided by your natural instincts. And you know, it's natural that every woman wants to have children, and then so you just have children, and then you're just supposed to figure it out because your instincts are going to guide you, and because you're made to have children,
Right.
and there will be this magical, natural, instant connection with your children. And I don't find my experience to be so. And Lisa's here because even though she's not a
I
parent,
have a fur baby at home. Does that count?
no, but you're a daughter.
I'm a daughter.
Everybody is a daughter or a son. So I think that, everybody's entitled to talk about parenting from the perspective of being somebody's children. And at the same time, one of the points that I wanted to discuss today is whether raising children and socializing our children is only the nuclear family's responsibility, or if it should be more of a community responsibility. Many of us are familiar with that African proverb, it takes a village to raise a child.
I think Hillary Clinton has a book called It Takes a Village,
Oh
also.
my God. Okay. Well, Hillary just ruined it for me
I'm
then.
sorry. Maybe I shouldn't have told you that.
Well, you know, I'm not the kind of feminist that is standing behind Hillary just because she's a woman. I'm more of a Marxist and
That's not Hillary.
queer and anti-racist feminist. So I'm not behind the train of Hillary. And how unfortunate that she appropriated that really good phrase. But yeah. Whose responsibility? Who invented this idea that raising kids, it's only this very restrictive, nuclear heterosexual family's
Right.
responsibility?
Well, I have a question for you to start us off. We're talking about being a feminist, like parent, but so where do you think you got your feminism from? Do you think it came from your parents and your family?
What a great question. I think
Thanks.
it absolutely did. And I think it also had to do with the fact that I grew up in the middle of a military dictatorship, and my parents were leftists. And my mom was a moderate feminist, kind of like a women's lib feminist. And I received what I think it's a lot of political education when I was young, in terms of always having to attend rallies and marches and meetings and going to the prison to visit my stepdad, who was a political prisoner, and being just immersed in that environment. I think it gave me, on one hand, the it raised consciousness and awareness on me of a lot of social justice issues. Mm-hmm. And but I also struggled with a lot of like ways that women were represented in those mediums, mm-hmm. like, you know, the revolutionary men and then the women that kind of like, it was kind of like a very essentialized version of women. And, you know, women are the
mothers. Like taking care of the hearth type thing while the men are...
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. So again, kind of like taking care of the emotional labor.
Right. And the children in the home while the men were on the, like, the front lines or something like that.
Exactly. Hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And a very normative version of womanhood. So yeah, I think it totally came from my own socialization, but... my own kind of like reaction to what that socialization was.
Interesting.
Where did your feminist come from?
Well, I don't know. I think people might find this a bit funny, but I'm the youngest of three children, and I have an older sister, middle brother, and I'm, you know, the youngest daughter. And like, I grew up in a house where I wasn't really told like I couldn't do anything. And so, like, when there were, like, chores and, like, outdoor things that had to be done, it wasn't like, oh, my brother will do them. It was like, you're all doing them because you live here and you're our children and you're going to go do it. So when I was a kid, you know, my dad would take me into his, like, workshop and we'd do, like, woodworking. And, like, I'm like, what's that? And he's like, this is how you, like, you know, use a drill and stuff. And this is how you build things. And
fantastic.
Yeah. And so in a weird way, like, I had a really... You know, my mom, like, worked outside of the home. She raised three kids and then worked outside of the home. And my dad worked. So it was like everybody was doing their thing. And so I just thought that was normal. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, you get into the real world and then you're started to told, well, you're a girl and you can't do that stuff. Or not necessarily you're a girl, you can't do it. But, like, the guy way or the dude way of doing things was always preferred. And I'm like... I don't understand why I'm being excluded from stuff just because I'm a girl, because I'm totally interested in, you know, like construction and building things and like understanding how things work. So I think that's where it like sparked my interest. And I often, and my dad finds this absolutely hilarious, but I often credit my father with my feminism, which I think a lot of people would find a bit odd. Because he just never told me I couldn't do anything.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah, we need more feminist men like your
But
like
he would
dad.
Never, ever call himself a feminist.
Yeah.
That's God He forbid. Just loves his kids. He like, I want my kids to have, you know, every opportunity that I didn't have. And I think every parent, really, they just want a better life for their kids at the end of the day, right?
Absolutely. And I recently was looking at an article in The Guardian that was talking about this issue of how emotional and domestic labor is kind of like the next frontier for feminism.
Yeah.
And I was really
I read that article that you posted on Facebook. I read it. It was really good.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, Marxist feminist and Marxist theory for the longest time has argued something similar. So the first thing that I wanted to raise is how feminism, and in particular Marxist feminism, has for the longest time challenged this gendered binary between the public and the private, and how the public is like the space of politics, you know, the masculine space for men where important things happen. And then the private space where we situate the family, it's kind of like, it's private. So it's kind of like, it's not touched by anything outside, and it's guided, again, kind of like by nature, right? So, of course, from Engels, from Frederick Engels and onwards, Marxists and Marxist feminists have challenged this idea that the family is a place of the natural and pointing at it as a very political place.
Totally.
Absolutely, because the family is the place with, you know, a lot of ideologies and political regimes that are articulated, right? Even the idea that we were talking about, that the natural shape of the family is a man, a woman, two kids, and a dog, right?
Or a cat.
That idea, it's already in itself the result of ideologies and history.
Oh, totally.
And
totally.
Engels linked the nuclear family to the transmission of property from men to men, patrilineality. So he linked it at the same time to capitalism and to patriarchy, which I still find very relevant.
Oh, totally. It's like the foundational institution of capitalist society. Mm-hmm. If you don't have that, then the whole system falls apart.
Yeah, but it, and you know, kind of like by default, we tend to think that, yeah, this is the only way that a family can exist. But then if we look at other ways that societies have organized the domestic and emotional labor and the care for the members of community, we have extended families, right? We have homoparental families. We have others.
What is that for?
Homoparental families would be families where there's two moms or two dads. And or other shapes of family that we that exist but are hardly ever recognized, right? A grandmother that lives with her grandchildren,
like Jane the Virgin. Do you watch that show?
No.
Oh, it's good.
Netflix?
No. It's on. I think it's on the CW. But it's about I'm derailing this episode, but it's about a Latina family, and it's the grandma, the mom, the daughter, and now the child, and that's their family unit.
Yeah, well, it's really important that those families get represented in popular culture because
different
models of organizing this care and this work, right? So first of all, it's kind of like to dismantle the idea that the family is kind of like a depoliticized space. And in fact, when I was talking to somebody close to me about how I wanted to do a show on feminist parenting, their reaction was like, why would you want to bring feminism into parenting? Like, just, you know, why would you subject your children to feminism? Like, force them into your ideology?
So like you're making them watch horror movies.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, my immediate reaction is, well, hello, why do you think that the default socialization is neutral? So the big news here is that the way that that children are being socialized by, quote unquote, by default is never neutral. There's no form of socialization that it's neutral.
Yeah, absolutely.
Especially once we agree that the family, it's not a natural space and it's a...
But you know what is a pretty good space? CFCR.
CFCR rocks. That's why we're here on 90.5 CFCR. The laundry list. Lisa and Manuela rocking in on feminist parenting.
Yeah, and we're just getting started.
We're just getting started.
And we're halfway through.
Oh, my God.
Let's move along. I got to stop talking.
We better move along. So the first thing that we have to understand is that, oppression, it's embedded on the fabric of the everyday normal, right? So if you look at the way, for example, that the cartoons that our children watch, the representations on media that they are being subjected, they're never neutral. Like, just have a look at some of the cartoons, right? I don't know, like Peppa Pig, the Beast something. All these, you know, animals that are transformed in these kind of like middle-class heterosexual nuclear families.
Whoa.
Where there's very defined gender roles. So, in a sense, our children are already being socialized into accepting very oppressive ideas like heteronormativity, sexism, racism, for sure. So the first, you know, that's the second thing that I would like to invite our listeners to think about, that this socialization that they're receiving, it's not neutral. So, you know, it's worth it trying to look at it, at those things that the messages they're receiving, and participate and put a little bit more of intention on those, right? And being more aware and unconscious and alert and present about what's going on with this socialization. What messages are we passing on to, you know, the next generation in relation to gender, sex, race, class, sexuality, etc. So
if you okay, so say you're listening and you're like totally agreeing with everything you say. So what is a parent to do if they feel like they want to sort of integrate feminism into their parenting? Like what would you recommend? Like how can parents mm-hmm. deal with these heteronormative structures yeah. in our society that kids are, you know, getting fed these messages?
Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, I wouldn't, you know, try to claim that I have kind of like the ultimate formula for this, but I have some thoughts, right?
Good.
I have
Let's hear
some
them.
Thoughts because, you know, we're all, as parents, we're always work in process. And if you're a parent, you'll understand how much it's a, you know, as much as it is a source of joy, it's also a source of frustration and anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I when I first became a parent, I also encountered in the West Coast this whole thing of kind of like the mommy culture, which at first I was like, oh, great, this is like solidarity between women who have children. And
right.
quickly I realized that it's really kind of like a culture that kind of like measures women against each other about who kind of like is the best mom and who is like more available to their kids and present and is doing more crafts and taking them to the park and doing all these things.
It's like mixed martial arts of mommy.
Yeah.
Like the Royal Rumble of moms
yeah.
competing against each other.
And of course, it's very crossed by class, right?
Yeah.
But in a way, you know, if you have the resources and the time to do that, that's fantastic. But, you know, there's also a lot of parents and... That's the other thing. I don't agree that children are only their mommy's responsibility. So I would like to talk more in terms of parenting as opposed to mothering, feminist parenting, because one of the first things that I'm struggling to challenge with my kids, right, is this idea that, you know, for example, that housework is something that just mommies do, right? As opposed to something that needs to be done and that we should all participate, right? So, and at the same time, trying to break with them some of the gender stereotypes that they face, right? What girls are supposed to do, what they're allowed to do, what boys can do, what boys should look like, what girls should look like,
right?
Something that also came up during this last summer's Girls Rock Camp, that it was a big realization that we had, like the facilitators of camp, is to be aware of how we talked about each other's appearance and remarks we made about our own bodies and other people's bodies.
Mm-hmm.
Because we already know as feminists that women's bodies get scrutinized and that, you know, when girls are transitioning into adulthood, they have a lot of trouble, you know, with feelings inadequacy.
Yeah.
Right.
And they look towards women that they respect for cues. Like, how should they act? Like, I have a little niece, and she is just like a sponge for social behavior. Like, kids, like, I can almost see it on her face. Like, she's constantly gathering information about how, you know, men and women interact, how women and women interact. Like, what do women talk about, right? Versus what do women and men talk about? And what do men and men talk about? Or you know, what do kids talk about? And how do parents talk differently to, you know, children, or children talk differently to adults? So kids are constantly like sponges of like, how am I supposed to be? I'm going to look to these adults to tell me.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think it's really important to be aware of, as you're saying, not only your own children, and if you don't have them, like, I'm pretty sure that we all have, you know, children in our environment to some degree, either within our biological family or, you know, from our friends. So, you know, to strive to be a role model that doesn't reproduce kind of like very rigid gender stereotypes about what men and women should do. And, you know, to challenge also heteronormativity, right? That you are just going to meet this, you know, every boy should be, oh, you're going to have a crush on him. Or, you know, the ultimate destiny of a girl is to, you know, get a boyfriend, right? So to be aware of that, I'm consciously trying to, you know, and sometimes it escapes because, you know, we are all always been socialized into this idea of heteronormativity mm-hmm. and romantic love, and men and women can only be, you know, they can't be friends, they can't collaborate, they can't be partners, they can't start a revolution. They can only have these little like.
I just threw that in the last. They can't start a revolution.
So yeah, how about instead of going for a date, we go like for start a riot. No, I'm just joking. We would never, for God's sake. Okay, but yeah, and as I said, it's not like you have to be the perfect feminist role model, because again, I don't like that kind of like,
it's a lot of pressure.
That kind of pressure on parenting, it's horrible.
And everybody, I mean, I don't know. I'm like middle age. I don't know. I'm getting older. As I get older, I'm realizing like, you know, most people are just making it up. Like we're all making up as we go along. We've never done this before.
Yeah.
Right. I've never been, you know, in my 30s before I was in my 30s. So, you know, I think we all like, it doesn't matter what we talk about on the show or elsewhere. We always want like one solution to problems. But I think, and me speaking as a non-parent, it seems like parents are under a lot of pressure to get it quote unquote right when there's no right. It's like there's many different ways to get to, you know, a happy kid that loves themselves, respects other people, and is empathetic towards the world around them. I mean, there's lots of ways to do that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And again, you know, I think that it's good to embrace our imperfection and the ambivalence that we have as being parents, that it's not always...
You don't know all the time, right?
Yeah, you don't know most of the time. And sometimes you get very frustrated, and it's kind of like very taboo, I find, to admit that sometimes you feel ambivalent.
Yeah.
You have ambivalent feelings. Sometimes you hate being a parent, and there's no space in society to admit that. Mm-hmm. It's very taboo, especially if you're a mom.
Yeah.
Oh my God, are you a bad mother? You don't love your children? Yeah, but sometimes...
I'm a human being too.
You know, yeah, all our relationships have a degree of ambivalence, and we know that because we're children of our parents.
Totally.
And we do know that, you know, that relationship with our parents is full of love and hate feelings.
You know? It's complicated, right?
It's complicated. You know, it has depth and complexity, and it can't be just like, yeah, I just live for my children, they're perfect, right?
Because that's like not a full existence. And no, I don't know, like going back to, you know, adults being role models for children, like parents are also role models for kids too. And I know a friend of mine who struggled when she was younger with an eating disorder. Part of the reason that she felt like that this sort of emerged for her was that her adoptive mother was just constantly talking about her weight all the time and then started talking about her weight.
Yeah.
And then it just it spiraled out. Like, so she saw her adoptive mother like constantly monitoring her own weight. And so she's like, okay, well, I guess as a kid, like that's what grown-up women do. So I guess, you know, the logical conclusion. And it caused a lot of problems for her. So we're all role models for our young little sisters and little brothers.
Yeah, and you may not even know that you are, you know, the cool aunt of like your friend's children, right? That you are a role model, that somebody there to, you know, to model alternative behaviors and ideas. It's important. And what you were last saying, I really want to hold on to that, the idea that we can raise children that are also not like immersed in this bubble of children's culture with like just cartoons and Teletubbies and pink things, but also to start giving our kids some sort of political education.
Yeah.
You know, as early as it's possible.
We don't give them enough credit, honestly. No. Like being around young kids, we do not give them enough credit. They pick up things and they understand way more.
Absolutely.
I'm speaking as a non-parent here.
I agree with that we underestimate our children in terms of, you know, I have tried to you know, talk to my children about, you know, what's going on in terms of, like, the refugee crisis, that there's children that don't have homes. We've gone to, like, rallies in support of, like, Free Palestine. And, you know, and they just, to the degree that they understand, they want to get engaged and they feel strongly about issues. And it's, I think that it is important that we slowly and transition our kids into being aware of social justice issues and prepare them so that they were teenagers. They're not like all of a sudden we're like demanding to them that they become responsible adults, and we haven't given them any tools for that.
But I think, you know, I think like empathy and compassion are things that need to be reinforced in children, but also in adults. And I think honestly, like that is how you, you know, when people talk about, am I a good person or am I a bad person, which I think is this ridiculous dichotomy. It's like weird religious stuff that like some weird hangover from this, like you're good, you're going to heaven, you're bad, you're going to hell crap. But it's, I think more than anything, it's like empathy and compassion are what we should strive to be as like humans, right? That's what we should be, in my humble opinion, what we should be trying to instill in the younger generations and also among our adult selves too.
Yeah, and you know, I see feminism as within a larger project of global social justice. Mm-hmm. So you know, you may not identify as a feminist, and you may already be putting into practice these values of empathy and compassion, mm-hmm. right? So, but as a feminist, you know, show, we thought it was important to bring this in the context mm-hmm. of parenting. Absolutely. And what it means when you know, to try to educate and socialize your children into being kind of like more social beings that are more you know, entitled to feel equal and to feel that they can collaborate and be in solidarity with others,
yeah,
as opposed to in competition or
and like hyper individual consumers that are just like about me getting my things.
Yeah, exactly.
we have to I don't know. I feel like as a society, we really have to talk, like be, you know, I don't know, open and honest and talk critically about those things.
Yes. And that's what we're here for.
But it looks like we're out of time.
Oh, that went on so fast.
I know.
That went by so fast.
We'll have to do another one because there's so much to talk about.
There is. Thank you, everyone, for listening to The Laundry List. Again, this is 90.5 CFCR. And this was Lisa and Manuela.
Good night.
See you next week.